available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And man, it's hard to get good help these days. Like, hey, we're
Look,
about to go live.
Where's my countdown? Where's my, like, in five, four, three,
yeah,
two?
I'm like, here we go, which means we're going live. And then Dave starts
Sometimes
talking.
You say, here we go. Like 15 minutes beforehand, and then you're just sitting there, you go to the bathroom, come out, then we're live.
Yeah.
You know?
We do that stuff. Yeah. Borbo says dead conference walking. No, Borbo. We are still the conference of champions, the Pac-12 of champions, or the whatever, the podcast of champions of the Pac-12 of champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. Got a little disruptive.
Cameron gave us a good review in the comments right now. Incredible intro. So tight.
There you go. Thanks, Cameron. I'll put that up on the screen. He also says, what's up, boys? Fellow degenerates. Yeah, you guys on a... So everyone, thank you so much for watching live on our YouTube channel. We'll call it simulcast because Dave doesn't like that.
That's not what it is.
But yeah, you are on a Thursday morning listening and watching us. So, you know, I think you might want to question your life choices. I'm just not sure. But
don't know why you're here.
Yeah, but we appreciate it.
But we love you.
For sure, we love it. Thank you so much for joining us. And if you're listening on the podcasting platform, that's great. We're going to try to do, I don't know if it'll be all season, but we're going to do two shows for the out-of-conference games because there are so many games to recap and preview. And we definitely wanted to talk. So we got to do a show Monday that was really well received, you know, talking about the Colorado situation, recapping all the games. And today's going to be a little shorter show, but it will preview all of the games and we'll do our picks and talk about the AP poll and stuff. So we do have a bunch of questions coming in. Please keep sending us emails, pac12podcast@gmail.com, or call or text us at 424-532-0678. We got a voicemail for you today. Also, you can tweet us at pac12podcast and the website is pac12podcast.com. If you have an iPhone, please go to your Apple podcasting app and follow us at the Podcast of Champions. Rate us with 5 stars and leave us a review where you can talk trash, whatever you'd like to do. But I don't think we have any new ones, Dave.
We have no new ones. Our listenership is falling apart, breaking apart at the seams. The structures upon which the show have been built are crumbling in so many different ways. The conference is falling apart. Our robust group of 5-star reviewers... Always the same guy. He's written 735 reviews.
We have a lot of reviews.
No longer doing it. We're counting on you out there. Yes, you. And you're failing.
Ernesto says this simulcast is still available in more homes of the Pac-12 Network. Yeah. Man, it's still interesting to see what's going to happen with this whole mess, but we're going forward now with actual real Pac-12 football.
Dude, Pac-12 is ascendant. The Pac-12 is prime. The Pac-12 is first among all, first among equals.
Yeah.
The Pac-12 is undefeated, baby.
Undefeated conference. Now, it's going to end this week because there's a conference game.
You don't know. That could end in a tie. You have no idea.
I don't think it can. I don't think that's allowed anymore.
I don't know. There could be a lightning storm that just causes it to like get kicked back several weeks.
Like
who knows?
A haboob in downtown
LA.
Yeah,
a haboob in downtown LA.
There could be. But you'd mentioned this, David. The Pac-12 is undefeated. It's very good. If you look at the AP poll, which is the more important poll, and polls don't really matter, especially this early. I don't know why Clemson would still be ranked, but whatever. Seven teams in the top 27 spots.
Way to sneak UCLA in there, baby.
UCLA is coming in at 27. But that's still up there. And then Colorado made their debut. To go from one of the worst teams in college football history to like nationally ranked in week two is pretty impressive for Coach Prime. And Colorado, the Beavs, only moved up two spots. I think they should actually be higher. We had them at number one in our power rankings because, you know, they look really impressive. They're at number 16 in the AP poll. We got the Oregon Ducks up at number 13. Utah is at number 12 after beating Florida, beating that ass at home. Then you got Washington coming in at number 8. And then USC staying at number 6. Washington moved up two spots. USC stayed the same. They actually had, what was it? LSU was ahead of them, and they dropped down, but Florida State jumped ahead of them. So,
yeah. So two top 10 teams, USC and Washington, four in the top 13, five in the top 16, and six in the top 22. It really impressive start. I think it reflects a lot of what we saw in week one. And the thing is, and I was still convinced that the bottom of the Pac-12 would still be kind of poopy.
And it's not.
It's not. I would say there's one team that looks like it is in kind of in the phase of a rebuild, and that's ASU. Everybody else looks some version of frisky. I think Arizona looks kind of the same team they were last year. ASU looks like they're going to have a year zero where they're just rebuilding. Everybody else looks dangerous in some way. Cal and Washington State look dangerous. UCLA, once it figures out its quarterback situation, looks dangerous. And that's Stanford looks dangerous. Yeah. So it is a much stronger league than even the top 25 indicates, because there's a lot of really good teams that are in that middle of it now.
When we did our preseason picks, like I really felt there was going to be divided, like sort of was last year where there was like the top half and the bottom half, and the bottom half always lost to the top half. From what we see, I mean, the top half looks really good, but the bottom half looks like they can get some wins. And that's very Pac-12-y of that. You're going to get some of these teams bouncing up. When you get Cal putting a 50 burger up on the road, I mean,
damn,
all bets
you're
are
a
off.
60 burger. It was 58 points.
Yeah. Like that's something we hadn't seen, you know,
not since Sonny Dykes, baby.
You know, we've seen these teams not have, like, you know, Colorado not having a pulse, like looking to get triple digits and yardage. I forget. I was listening
like
to
National Offensive Player of the Year, Shedeur Sanders.
Yeah. Four 100 yard wide receivers. I forget. I was listening to somebody and I my apologies, but I guess all of last year there was only two. So they only had 200 yard receiving games for a receiver all last year. They had four dudes do 100 yards in one game.
Insane.
So to Colorado go from a doormat, like kind of what was below the doormat, like
no, that, like literally, very literally one of the worst college football teams I've ever seen to something dangerous.
Probably a bowl team. You know, that's a big jump and capable of beating most anybody in the conference, which never would have thought that to be the case.
Yeah.
You know, we knew Cal was Cal lost to Colorado last year. And if you could score 50 points, you can beat anybody, you know? I mean, that's just that. So
with your backup quarterback for 3.5 quarters.
Yeah. So the bottom looks a lot better. So I think it's going to be really interesting to pick a lot of these games, preview a lot of these games. It's a huge, huge, huge weekend for the Pac-12 because after week one, it's great to be talked about. A lot more Power 5 opponents this week. So there's some, you know, big opportunities for the Conference of Champions. And we'll see. But there's just a lot of great matchups. We are still doing the survival pool. Everybody survived because everybody won in the Pac-12. You couldn't have picked a loser. So that's good. Make sure you get your picks in. We put it up on our website. We've tweeted it out. We will keep putting up Pac-12podcast.com. So if you entered last week, you have to enter this week or you're screwed. Now, all the games are Saturday, so you have time. But enter those. We were both on Arizona State last week. We're different this week. I'm taking Oregon State. I'm kind of going with the safe one, playing an FCS school, like the one, like, pure, you know, true winner you should have. And David's going a little different.
I'm going with the most safe one in the league, which is Colorado rolling up on the Huskers.
See, if you think Colorado's that good, wouldn't you want to pick them later? You know, I don't know.
It's still a tough schedule. It's still super dicey. And the thing is, like, Colorado is, I think they're really good right now. They're a couple injuries away from suddenly not looking very good at all. And so I want to get them early while they're still very healthy. But I think they're going to roll on Nebraska.
All right. You're big on that one. We'll get that in the previews and stuff. Ernesto says, has Pac-12 announced when they'll pull the plug on the TV network? No, there's not been a lot of announcements. And I haven't read it yet, but Wilner did a story this morning about that Oregon State, Washington State basically asked the Pac-12 for some financial stuff. And they haven't heard back yet. So I feel like they're still trying to figure things out. It'd be interesting if like Washington State, Oregon State end up doing like a deal with the Mountain West. I think the Pac-12 network, there's still value there with the infrastructure. There's value with all the NCAA units that you would have coming in. You know, there's some liabilities there. You still have to pay out Comcast and everything. But I'm still curious to see what happens with that. But it'd be awesome if there really was a Pac-2 and they just had an agreement with the Mountain West to like schedule a bunch of games. And they still kind of keep their own entity and then sort of try to grow it from there. Because you got 2 years to still be mm-hmm. a conference, you know, if you drop below eight. But
leave the light on for everyone who wants to come back.
My gut's telling me that they're going to keep the Pac-12 sort of entity. It's like the shell company. Like there's still value in that. They're going to keep that.
Yeah, they should.
Keep it around. All right, so let's do, I don't know if we want to call it this, but.
Pac-12 Roundup.
But no, we definitely don't want to call it that.
We don't call it that? Preview all the games? Do we need like a preview?
Yeah, we probably need a preview sound thing.
Okay, so we're going to do all our picks for the games. We have some early morning games. We have Pac-12 after dark games. We got like mid-afternoon games. It's sort of tiered. So you kind of have to pick your poison where you want to watch.
And these are not staggered in any way. Like you get like...
Right at the same time.
Two right at the same time in the morning, like four right at the same time in the afternoon, and then three right at the same time in the evening.
Jeffrey Paul says, what are you going to do? Oh, I'm sorry. That was the wrong one. Let me pull this up. Let's see if that works. He wants to know about the week 13 in the survival pool.
It just goes as long as it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
everyone will have picked everyone by 12 weeks in.
Yeah. There's no more teams left. So you have to have picked. Yeah. So there's no week 13.
Yeah.
Maybe I guess we could do like some kind of tiebreak or something. I don't know.
Yeah, if we get to a point where it's a tiebreaker, that's what we did last year, I think, because we had like three or four people.
Yeah. Like Dave said, like this is going to be harder. I don't think we're going to see as much because last year it was easier because there was like these six teams always beat these six teams. And like now it's like that's not going to be the case. Like Washington State's going to, you know, beat Oregon or something. And you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, that wouldn't have happened last year.
Exactly.
All right. First up, we've got
Utah Utes.
This is 9 a.m. on ESPN. If you're a Spectrum subscriber, prayers up. Number 12, Utah at Baylor. Utah is an 8-point favorite. Let me see, actually. Yeah, it's still an 8-point favorite over the Baylor Bears.
It was like four before.
Don't
or something.
Step on my sound effect.
Okay.
Roar. Is that good?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Not worth doing again, but
no, I mean it was definitely worth doing again. I'll do it again, actually.
Roar.
Is it getting worse or better?
It's about the same.
About the same. Okay.
Definitely not three times.
I'll do it a fourth. I really will. Utah's an 8-point favorite on the road. This is one that we pegged both as a loss preseason, but then Baylor went and did a very funny thing, which was lose to Texas State. And it was like a real loss. Like they lost, I think they ended up losing by 11, but even in Bill Connolly's post-game win expectancy, which I like to check out, they were still a loser. It wasn't like one of those lucky things.
No.
They probably shouldn't have lost by 11.
There was like six turnovers.
But they should have at least lost by a field goal. It would have been an upset if they'd pulled off the win. I don't know what the heck's going on there, but Utah's a whole lot better than Texas State. Which recently fired Jake Spavital, who's kicking ass at Cal. Now 8 points is a lot, and Utah doesn't have Cam Rising still.
Right.
They've got the pig farmer. It's a different deal away from Rice Eccles.
They kind of suck. They're like 500 team on the road.
I'll go Utah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Utah as well. Baylor lost their quarterback for a few weeks also. But, yeah, that just doesn't look like a buttoned-up team. Now, we could see Baylor come back home and just really play well in this one. But I love the way Utah handled business against Florida in a revenge thing where there's a lot of pressure. It's an SEC school without your quarterback, without your tight end, without your linebacker. Like, just guys, you know, the, if you're reading like Phil Steele's preview, like name those like four or five guys that you're, these are really key guys. Like most of them were gone. They weren't even playing in this game and it didn't matter. Yeah. So I like Utah in this spot. I mean, they're not a team that's like going to, I mean, they could potentially boat race Baylor, but I feel like 7.5, 8, like, I think they're going to, you know, you could see them win by a touchdown, but I feel like this is going to be 10 points or something like that, where Utah sort of controls the game. They're not putting up a ton of points, but they control the line of scrimmage and just sort of like, you're not going to get them. And so, yeah, I like Utah on this spot. So we'll both go with the Utes.
Yep.
Yeah. And Baylor looks ass. So
super,
which
assy.
Is so funny because Dave Aranda was the hot.
He was the hot shit, man.
Yeah. And it's, you know, and this, you know, this is a Big 12 matchup, right? These are going to be Big 12 teams. I love the, this is like your future conference that you're going to be playing in. And I feel like Colorado came in and whipped up on the Big 12 a little bit. I feel like Utah is going to whip up on the Big 12 a little bit.
Yeah, there's going to be like, hey, we want to make it clear who the top dog is here.
Yeah. We're coming into your conference that has a lot of mediocrity and we're going to dominate it.
Yep.
Speaking of domination.
Colorado Buffalo.
This is also a 9 a.m. on Big Fox. Nebraska heading to number 22, Colorado, which is a 3-point favorite at home. These are the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Farming sucks. Is that a good sound effect?
Pretty good.
You like that?
Yeah.
Is that what they're doing? Are they husking corn? Are they like farmers? Is that what we're going for there?
I think so. Yeah, I think they grow corn, and at some point you need to like
husk it.
Yeah,
as one does. Nebraska,
is husking the actually getting the corn off, or is it when you take the husk off? I don't know.
Yeah, are they eating the corn or are they farming it?
I believe farming.
Because should it be more like a?
That's just eating it.
Yeah.
Do you eat your corn? You know, if you're doing corn on the cob,
mm-hmm.
do you go around or do you go side to side?
Mm.
Like typewriter.
I probably spin it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's serial killer shit. No, just kidding. But I go like side to side. I'll try to do, yeah, it's like a, and I try to keep it even.
You're typewriting.
I typewrite it, yeah.
Psycho. Okay, Nebraska, fresh off losing in a barn burner. An absolute, I mean, this one was a track meet. 13-10.
It was 10-10 for a long time. Like, this is what we're looking forward to, like, next year. Like,
just dog shit. Absolute dog shit. Minnesota won 13-10. It was a weird game. Nebraska probably should have won. Let me see. What was the post-game win expectancy here? Yeah, Minnesota should have lost by 17. So Nebraska's probably a little bit better than that.
Yeah, they've lost a lot of these close games when they should have won them.
Yeah, their quarterback threw 3 picks. He was horrible. But they probably should have won that game. This is on the road, though, against Ascendant Colorado. The Buffs looked extremely impressive against TCU. I would take Colorado minus 10.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely taking a minus 3.
Yeah, I think it's too close of a – there's momentum. And I like, you know, the way this team is playing right now. Like this – I don't know how long it can last, but they looked like a very well coached team. Like that's the biggest takeaway. Yeah, there were star players, but they were buttoned up. They went on the road against a team that you know is well coached because they went all the way to the national championship game without a great defense or anything. And they look like the better coached team. And I feel like you're going to see the same kind of thing, you know, on Saturday. I don't know if Travis Hunter is going to have to play 130 plays. But you know, Shardar Sanders good. They have a good run game. There's really good. I think there's good plays to be had, and they're going to score points. And Nebraska didn't score points. Now it's going to be a different style of game. Those Big Ten games where you're just it's you know 10-10 like in the fourth quarter is like crazy. So I think there'll be more points scored in this one because Colorado's going to push the pace, and you're going to see you know a lot of stuff happen. But yeah, I like Colorado here. Would I be shocked if like they kind of lay an egg and Nebraska comes in and, you know, that might be Colorado all year. They might have like really good games and really bad games, but they're, you know, they're sort of like, they look much better than what you thought. But I do like Colorado on this one. Nebraska's their history of losing close games is, you know, they just that's what they do.
This isn't going to be a close game.
All right. Well, we'll see. I think it could be. But if it is, you edge Colorado. And if it's not, it's probably going to be a Colorado win.
Yeah, so. But it's not going to be a close game.
All right.
It's going to be a blowout.
So we're both on the Mountain Stampede. We both have the Mountain Schools in this one. The former Big Eight rivalry here. But okay. So next up, that we got a little lull. And if you have Pac-12 Network, you can watch this one.
Washington Huskies.
Yeah, so Washington is taking on Tulsa. I'm going to quickly figure out what Tulsa's mascot is.
Green Wave? No, wait, that's
that was the
late.
Other one.
That's too
no, the Tulsa is the Golden Hurricane.
Ah.
Is that right? I've never heard that before. The Golden Hurricane, so that's more like a...
It doesn't sound very golden.
No. It should have like a sprinkle in it. No?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
You like that?
I couldn't do better.
All right. So Tulsa's coming to town to Washington. This is on 2 p.m. on the Pac-12 Network in Seattle. Washington is a – I've got it first as a 30 – what do I have?
You have here? 35.
I have 35. It's moved to 34, but we're going to stick with 35 because that's what I wrote in the doc. I actually will take Tulsa here.
Okay.
It's too many points, and Tulsa – I mean, I know it was against like some scrub ass. I think it was a FCS team, but they put up a lot of points. I wouldn't be surprised if this is a little bit more of a not competitive. I don't think it's going to be competitive, but I think it will be more like a 4-touchdown win for Washington and not the necessarily the huge blowout they put on Boise State.
Yeah, this is a tough one. What they played Arkansas Pine Bluff.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not
great.
No, like. That's, I mean, yeah, no. I don't know how you're gonna stop Washington,
mm-hmm.
and if Tulsa scores, Washington will score. If Tulsa doesn't score, I think Washington will score. I think Washington is going to score a lot,
mm-hmm.
and 35 is a ton.
It's a lot,
and it's
points.
Really hard watching a game when you're trying to cover a huge spread because if it's like 21-7, like early second quarter, you're like, oh, this isn't enough, you know?
Yeah.
And then you can kind of blow things out. But I'm kind of riding with the Pac-12 and just like putting beatdowns on people. I'm going to ride with Washington on this one. And
look at you.
35 points.
You're a believer.
I like it's not 35 and a half. It's not 38. Like USC's spread was 38 last week. And you're sort of like, oh my God, they're going to win by 6 touchdowns and not, or whatever, 5 touchdowns and not cover. But yeah, give me 35, or I'll give the 35 and take UW.
All right. Look at you.
I love it. Arkansas Pine Bluff, come on. 42 points against.
Come on.
That's not that we're talking about. Okay, a little bit later on, we got
Oregon Ducks.
All right, this is 4 p.m. on Big Fox, number 13, Oregon at Texas Tech. They're the Red Raiders. That's got to be racist, right?
Why does it have to be racist?
Well, they got to be talking about Native Americans, right?
Oh, I don't know.
Is that what they're doing there? Or are they going pirates? Are they pretending it's pirates?
I'm not sure. We got like 91 people watching live. We only have 25 likes. Smash that.
I'm going to go with the pirates then.
Okay.
Arr! Okay. Well, Regardless, this game is very weird for me. It's set very oddly. Oregon is only a 6.5-point favorite over Texas Tech on the road. Texas Tech just lost to Wyoming.
Yeah, but that was in Laramie.
Okay. Oregon just scored 81 points in a football game. I know it was against Portland State, but they scored 81. This is another one where I would probably take Oregon minus 14,
for
but
sure.
I'm definitely taking a minus 6.5.
I would say, yeah.
I think they'll smoke them. And I think Oregon is one team that we're not talking about nearly enough as like an actual contender, just because, I don't know, for some reason they're getting kind of lost in the shuffle. They're going to be really good. They already look, I mean, look, we kind of poo-pooed it in the recap show, but scoring 81 against anybody is not easy to do. It's just, you have to continue to execute your offense, even if it is against a dogshit FCS. So, I think they're going to score a lot of points, and I don't think Texas Tech is going to keep up.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think it would go up to 14 in this one. Like the, was it the, so the Washington game we just talked about, it was kind of close in the third quarter and Washington's pulled away, but that was against like a good team. Oregon gave up like an early touchdown to Portland State and then never relented. So I it's great that the defense played well, continued to play well, you know, after putting up 50 points or whatever in the first half. Yeah, I feel like you're facing your old quarterback. Tyler Shough is the quarterback at Texas Tech, right?
Is he really?
Yeah. You didn't even know that?
Okay. Shough?
Shough.
Shough?
Shough.
Shug?
They Shug? Just lost. I don't think the Big 12 Shough is that good.
I need to make this point anew for many more people. Shough is the only way that name can't be pronounced.
And that's,
you could pronounce that name any other way, and it would make sense in the English language. Shough, no. That's not a CK. It's a GH.
Yeah, so I think they're going to beat that ass of their former quarterback who, you know, I don't think the Big 12 is going to be that good, to be honest. Like, maybe Texas is good. We're going to see they play Alabama this weekend. You know, Oklahoma could potentially be good. But those other teams, I don't know. Like, we already saw TCU lost. And, you know, Kansas State, I think, could be pretty good. But we're not seeing them on the schedule. John says blue collar Dave in a Carhartt shirt as he toils in the podcast mine and the Twitter refinery smelting the hottest of takes.
That's right, baby.
Very nice.
I do it all for you, the people.
Yeah, so I will go on. This is like one of those ones I might do in a parlay.
I like the way you pronounce parlay.
What, how do you say it?
Yeah, you just said parlay.
Parlay. By the way, thanks again to my bookie. Promo code PAC12 if you want to use it. Did well week one, so I'm going to like do some week two. I did that one parlay I didn't get, but I'm going to try to do – I'll bet all the games that I pick, and then I'll try to do a parlay, I think, with – I think I'm going to put Oregon in the parlay. I'll probably put Colorado in the parlay and maybe Utah. So I feel like going against the Big 12 teams or former Big 12 teams is what I'm going to like go on this one.
I feel good about Oregon and Colorado. I wouldn't feel like that great about Utah to make them part of a three-legger. Okay.
All right. Well,
that's just me.
I might do it. The cool thing about it is if, you know, well, like if I hit the first two and you just want to cash out, you can actually cash out now on my bookie. So that's kind of nice.
Exciting.
I haven't tried that yet, but I want to do it. Okay. We're both going to take the Duckies on the road. All right. Here's a big one. We've got
Washington State Cougars.
4:30 p.m. on ABC, number 19, Wisconsin. Badger, 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 snake. It's a snake. At Washington State. Washington State is a 6-point dog at home. And it's like, have these people even watched the Pac-12? Do they even know? Do they even know, Ryan?
I don't know if they know.
I don't think they know. I think it would be nice if they did know, but they don't know. Washington State, so in the postgame win expectancy, I love this. They zeroed out Colorado State. Colorado State had a 0% chance of winning that game based on the underlying stats of that game. They blew them the hell out.
Yeah.
Washington State, new offense, new offensive coordinator, the whole thing. It looks a lot better. I think they're going to win this game, but they're definitely covering the 6.
I like Washington State in this one, too. Who did – Wisconsin played somebody not that great.
Buffalo. They struggled for a while.
Yeah, and but I think they're going to be – I think Luke Fickell is going to have them in a good spot. This is just – it's a tough place to go. I don't know who's going to win. Like, it could be a field goal game either way. And, like, I wouldn't be shocked if Wisconsin came in and won. But, you know, I like the 6 points here. Just – maybe they come in and win by a touchdown, but if I feel like this could definitely be close. I mean, Cam Ward looks like a different quarterback with this new offense, and they are pushing the ball down the field more. The defense was really good. I feel like you could keep this close. The fact that the defense is playing well and you're not just throwing the ball to the line of scrimmage anymore all the time, I like taking the 6 points here. I'm not sure how it's going to turn out. Maybe there's a couple weird turnovers, but 6 points at home, I'll take the Cougs for sure in this one.
Yeah, and Wisconsin was up 14-10 on Buffalo at halftime.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know, like that's a home thing and
scrub ass
jump team around and all that kind of stuff.
Scrub ass Big Ten.
Yeah, plus Washington State, they got the factor of
This is the first time they've hosted an FBS team at home and not, or a Power Five team at home in like 1,000 years in non-conference.
Yeah. Sweet. Okay, so we're both on the Cougs in this one. I find this one really interesting. We've got
Arizona Wildcats.
Yeah, so the 4:30 p.m. on the SEC Network, Arizona traveling to Mississippi State, the Bulldogs. So that's again, because they're all fucked up little animals that have been bred.
Inbreeding?
Yeah.
That sounded a little inbred.
Yeah, into animals that like can't even feed themselves and can barely move. Anyway, Mississippi State is currently a 9-point favorite over Arizona at home. This is the one I probably feel like least good about.
Your confidence level is low.
It's extremely low. I don't know what to make about Mississippi State. I don't really know what to make of Arizona based on that week one game. I thought it was like a little bit slow start. But I could see this being a game that Jaden Delora gets up for. I could see it being one of those games where, you know, they've got a good, you know, they weren't trying to show anything about against Northern Arizona. Maybe they're trying to.
They were trying to win because they lost a couple of years ago.
Yeah, but, you know, it's an FCS. This is probably the one they've been.
But they lost to a couple of years ago.
They've been circling this one. That's my point.
Yeah.
I think 9 points is a little too much. So give me Arizona.
Here's the thing. Jaden Delora has had some great games and then some like
poopy ones.
Three interception, you know, kind of things. But in my, I've been back in the pack. I think I picked every Pac-12 school so far to cover. And I'm not going to, you know, with 9 points, with this kind of explosive offense, I feel like maybe Mississippi State wins by a touchdown or something. Yeah, things could get out of control. And if it might spiral when you're on the road in SEC country and Delora throws a couple picks, they put the ball on the turf. But if they're playing okay, they're going to score points.
Yeah.
Mississippi State will score points. The 9 just seems like too much. So the 9 is like you're betting on Arizona sort of like tanking, which they could. You know, I'm not saying they're not going to tank, but outside of Arizona just kind of like laying an egg or like getting sort of steamrolled because things just get out of control. You know, I could see it go 7 points either way. Then maybe they lose a tough one on the road, but 9's a lot. I think 9 you need like a collapse from Arizona.
Yeah, so I agree.
I'm gonna take the Wildcats in this one. Another game. This will be the third game at the exact same time, but I'm sure everyone will be watching this one.
UCLA Bruins.
4:30 p.m. on CBS, UCLA at the San Diego State Aztecs. I think last year we did like kind of a, it was like a sling, like a.
Oh.
For Aztecs.
Is that what they were they sling people?
I don't know.
Like David Goliath?
I don't know. I honestly don't. I don't know what their weapon of choice was. And I don't want to make the sound of a human sacrifice. So anyway, San Diego State's currently a 14.5-point dog. That actually, I think, is continuing to move in. Oh, no, it's back to 14.5. It was 15.5 earlier today.
I like
very
that.
Similar line situation to what UCLA experienced at home against Coastal Carolina.
No, exactly.
Very similar.
14.5.
Yeah.
1 by 14.
Uh-huh.
Annoyed me because I had UCLA.
Correct. So here's the deal. I'm going to give you the skinny. UCLA has not announced a starting quarterback for Saturday. My strong suspicion is that it's going to be Dante Moore. However, I still think there's going to be a platoon. I think it's going to be Dante Moore, and then I think some version of Ethan Garber's playing about the same amount that Dante Moore played in the first game.
Okay.
This will almost certainly depress productivity offensively. What will also depress productivity offensively is that San Diego State once again has, like, you know, a decent enough defense. Still running that 3-3-5 that Rocky Long was running forever. So I think it's not going to be UCLA scoring like 45. And then on the flip side, San Diego State, their offense is, as has always been, pretty much trash. You know, they can run the ball, though. And I don't think they're going to score a ton against UCLA, but I can easily see this being basically the same sort of game as it was against Coastal Carolina, where UCLA scores like 24, 27, and San Diego State scores 13-17. So all that being said, I've got this more as like UCLA by 10, not 14 and a half. So give me San Diego State.
You know, San Diego State beat Ohio by 7. Do you think that, you know,
Ohio's okay. The more interesting data point is when they allowed 28 points to Idaho State. But I invite you to go look at the box score of that game, because this is more San Diego State's offense being absolute garbage. Defensively, they only allowed 2 points per drive. They allowed an astounding 14 drives because their offense was so bad. But 2 points per drive, that's pretty damn good defense.
So UCLA's secondary is kind of ass, right? But San Diego State is not going to take advantage of that. I think this is a bad year for San Diego State. I think everyone in the Pac-12 sort of has a bad taste in their mouth because they would just beat all these Pac-12 teams.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to be the year. I feel like this is going to be, you know, week two, Chip Kelly, Dante Moore starting, scoring a bunch of points. 14 and a half is a lot, but I'm going to take UCLA again. They were really close last week. They're 14. Mm-hmm. I feel like they can get to 15 this week. You know, maybe there's a two-point conversion in there or something. Dante Moore doesn't throw that pick in the end zone that would have got the cover.
Mm-hmm.
I like them to cover. They're going to go on the road and cover this one. I could see, like, the Chip Kelly stuff. I get it. And if I lose this one, I'm probably going to be down on UCLA for, like, the rest of the season, because that's just the way my brain works. But I'm going to stick with it. They shouldn't even been that close against Coastal Carolina. But I think San Diego State's pretty bad.
Okay.
So give me the Bruins. And that's, I think, the second one we picked differently.
Yeah, we've picked UW and San Diego State.
The stupid, like, 35-point spreads are just like, yeah. I mean, those are coin flips in themselves, right? Like, it just depends how things go.
Yep.
Okay, next up, we've got
Oregon State Beavers.
The Oregon State Beavers are hosting at 6 p.m. on the Pac-12 Network the UC Davis Aggies. Again, just kind of a, right?
Sure.
Isn't Aggie like a agricultural, like, you know, people who like work in
farming
agriculture
and stuff? Yeah. Yeah.
So that was like kind of like digging some holes and planting some stuff.
Yeah. What are they planting in Davis? What's the big crop up there?
Dude, I don't know.
Weed.
I mean, no, it's probably, I mean, as it is everywhere, it's probably like almonds. And,
a lot of almonds. Are you an almond milk guy?
No.
You a milk guy? Are you like Jim Harbaugh milk guy? Like,
I mean, no, I'm not Jim Harbaugh-esque.
Steak and
but
milk.
You know, a little bit of milk with some cookies, not the I worst love thing milk in the world. And
cookies, yeah.
Yeah, who doesn't love that? This is 6 p.m.er. We don't have a line on this one. Oregon State's going to crush them. If you find a line that's like, I don't know, anything less than 35,
probably definitely take it.
Probably take Oregon State.
Yeah, I mean, two running backs that can beat you, DJ Ungalale, like 250-pound quarterback. He's probably going to get two or three rushing touchdowns in this one when they get down to the inside the five. I like Oregon State to roll in this one. That's why I picked them in my confidence pool. So, yeah, I like the Beavs. We'll see. Real quick, Cody in the chat says, still have Ryan's 2-10 prediction for Colorado. Coloring my vision, WTF. Yeah, no, like, those are preseason ones. Like, I'm telling you, they're probably going to make a bowl. Like, that's – sometimes it just takes 1 week, and you're like, you don't want to overreact, but my guess was it was going to take a year rebuild. There's not. They're going to be, you know, competitive this year. So I think they're going to be a bowl team. So, like, I wouldn't take too much stock in that preseason prediction. But instantly watching them say, okay, they're well, not only are they like talented, they're well coached.
It's just bizarre how Ryan thinks they're going to lose 10 straight games after this weekend.
Right. That's, I think they're a bowl team now. So don't look at that as putting much weight on anything. All right. Then we got three Pac-12 after dark games. Yeah. We don't have any line on that game. So we don't have any picks. First up, we've got the first conference game. We have
Stanford Cardinal
taking on
USC Trojans.
Yeah, so this is on 7:30 on Big Fox. Stanford traveling to the Coliseum against number 6 USC. USC is a 29, and that 9 is not an 8. It's a 9-point favorite over Stanford. Now, we just watched Stanford against Hawaii. Ashton Daniels can run a little bit. Ashton Daniels can throw a little bit, and they've got a tight end that's tough to cover. This is going to be the actual first real test for Alex Grinch and his defense. The first two games were, come on.
Right.
Siobhan Cordero, and you're allowing 28 points. I think Stanford could score a little bit in this game. Now, I think their offensive line could have some issues up front. I think Ashton Daniels is going to be under a lot more pressure than he was in the opener against Hawaii. It's a different deal. It's a second straight road game. That always can come with some body clock effects. They're coming back from Hawaii, which, you know, it's a lot of travel in a short amount of time. But 29 points is too many. I got to go Stanford here. I think they're not the pushover that we thought they'd be. They're also not the pushover that either Nevada or San Jose State should have been, but the one that Nevada was. I think this will be an actual test a little bit. And I think USC is going to win comfortably, but I don't see it being more than four touchdowns.
I agree. David Bailey's like a terror coming off the edge. Like, he could disrupt a drive or two. Now, could USC come out and just boat race them?
Like, no doubt.
It's possible. But I feel like it's going to be – I think I sent my preview to Jackson Moore, and I were exchanging, you know, five questions before the game. I think I was saying something like 49-24 or something, where I feel like they win by, like, you know, four touchdowns if, but, like, 29 is a lot. Like, you got to win by, you know, five. Or it's five big scores. It's, you know, I think I feel more comfortable just taking the points in this one, where USC probably wins comfortably. But Stanford's a team, like, at the end of the game, is Miller Moss scoring a bunch of touchdowns to get the cover? You know, I don't know. And he could be. And, you know, maybe they just, like, absolutely roll over him. But sweating out those huge spreads 2 weeks in a row, they got it last week, winning by, like, 52. But I think against Stanford, like, that's a lot of points. So I'll just take the points in this one and not feel super confident about it.
Agreed.
All right. Next Pac-12 After Dark game, we've got
California Golden Bears.
This is a 7:30 p.m.er on ESPN. The Auburn Tigers,
meow,
at California. Cal is a 6.5-point home dog. Nobody watched Cal in week one.
They didn't realize that they scored 58 points.
They scored 58 points. And, okay, people talking some crap about North Texas like it's Texas State or something. North Texas was 7-7 last year. Not all that dissimilar from, say, Coastal Carolina. Like, they were qualitatively decent enough. Blowing them the hell out is...
on the road.
On the road by 37 points. That's... it's not nothing. Auburn, I think they smoked whoever they were matched up against. I think it was some FCS or some crap. Massachusetts. They beat UMass. Well, so here's an interesting data point. They beat UMass by 45, but the postgame win expectancy had that more as a 14-point game. Auburn might be a paper tiger. You like that?
Yeah.
Is that good?
War Eagle.
Yeah. Do you like paper tiger?
No, because of the joke. Yeah, yeah, I got it. Yeah.
Did you think it was funny?
Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty good.
I mean, you're not usually that funny.
I'd call it like
that. That would be on the higher end.
I'd call it like funny. An 8 or a 9 on the classic 1 to 10 scale. Cal's going to win. They're definitely going to cover 6.5.
Yeah, I like Cal in this one. Just, I mean, again, I feel like this could be a close one, and, you know, maybe Cal screws up and Auburn kicks a field goal and wins at the end. But getting 6.5 points at home, like, there's enough of a chance that Cal's offense with Jake Spavital is good. It's legit. You know, I think the defense can play pretty good. This is a long way to go if you're Auburn. Yeah, not that I feel super great about it, but I feel much more comfortable taking points, you know, in this situation where there's a lot of stuff that could go wrong. Maybe Auburn comes out and there's just, like, SEC athletes everywhere and pushes Cal around, and you're like, yep, I mean, that certainly could happen. But I feel like there's going to be enough of a sort of back and forth that 6.5 points to me just seems like too many. So
absolutely.
I will go with Cal as well. And one last one, the Hoop Hoop game.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
7:30 p.m. on FS1. Oklahoma State traveling to Arizona State. These are the Cowboys. Or should it be instead of that, because that's like more like the sheriffs. It should be like, you know.
Okay.
Do you like that?
It, give me something from like Yellowstone. You know,
I've never seen the show.
How would you? It's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Give me something from Yellowstone. Why am I having to shoulder the load here?
Because this is your, I mean, you only do a couple things. Like, where's what to do?
Oklahoma State at ASU. ASU is a 3-point home dog. I've just got a nasty feeling that Arizona State's in for like kind of a tough year. I think they're going to have some trouble in conference because of how strong the conference is. Oklahoma State's not good.
No.
Not by any stretch of the imagination. They almost lost to Central Arkansas. But I don't know if ASU is any good either. It's at ASU. I don't know. This one's tough for me. I'm going to.
Do you want me to tell you what I'm doing? And you might do opposite or the same.
No, I got to take Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
There's the one team that just didn't look like it was, you know, I get it. Like, they were up by 14, but it seemed like it was close. There was some, like, weird stuff that was happening in the first half of that game. You get the haboob, and then everybody goes home. So yeah. The band goes – like, there's not even a band there anymore.
Yeah, there was, like, 400 people left in the stands.
So you're playing this game. You only score 3 points after halftime. It's, like, after midnight. Like, that – I get it. Like, it's hard to look too much into it. But just from what I saw, I think Jaden Rashada can get there, but –
it's going to take some work.
And who's the Drew Pine could potentially be coming back. Maybe he comes in. You got three quarter, you know, Trent Borgay. Like, I don't know. It seems like a little.
The game wasn't that different. Like, again, going back to the post-game win expectancy, looking at the underlying stats, they should have won it by 7, not 3. But yeah. That's still an FCS school that you're going to beat by a touchdown at home.
Yeah. That's the thing. I'm not big on the Big 12, as you know. And I think Oklahoma State's sort of going in the wrong direction a little bit. But I kind of feel this is the one that the Pac-12 sort of takes on the chin a little bit. And then you're kind of looking at Arizona State and like, all right, this is a rebuild for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So those are our picks for week 2. And I will be putting my bets onto my bookie. I hope you guys have a great Saturday because there's been a lot of games going on. All right. Why don't we take a break and we'll come back and do some questions. Back in a minute.
We're back.
Yeah. Rudy says, I'll take the haboob for the win.
Haboob.
Such a fun... and then West Texas Mike says, Cowboys, you got to offer an insult... In a Western twang.
All right,
something like that boy.
No, you got to say it in the twang. Gotta, that boy is all assless chaps and no cattle. Something like that.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Is that like a real thing?
No, I don't know what that is.
Was that just made up?
Yeah.
JB says 7:30 p.m. kickoff favors Cal.
Mm.
Yeah, because it's like super late for those Auburn peoples. Okay. So let's get to some questions. I think let's play the voicemail first. Here you go.
Hey, Brian and Steve. Trevor here. First of all, I just wanted to wish Lincoln Riley a happy 40th birthday. And I got to say that the most surprising things I've learned in the last couple of weeks are, number one, that multiple Pac-12 coaches love Mumford & Sons. Not to mention one Pac-12 coach loving Train. But secondly, that Lincoln Riley is somehow older than our beloved Dave Woods. Dave looks like he would have been Lincoln Riley's shop teacher back in Mill Street High School. How is it possible that Riley could have been bouncing a young bearded Dave on his knee back in the 80s? I don't understand it, but I digress. My question for you guys as our resident USC and UCLA experts is, if the SC and UCLA jobs came open next year, who would you guys prefer to run your respective programs? And who do you think would be a better fit stylistically? Former Glendora Tartan legend Jonathan Smith even though he's a SoCal kid, seems to kind of embody the small town college coaching ethos, and who has built this physical, tough, disciplined team of under the radar players up in Corvallis, or Coach Prime, whose teams also appear to be very disciplined and organized and well coached, but who is obviously stylistically and personality wise about as far from Jonathan Smith as it gets, and has a recruiting ceiling that would seem to be absolutely through the roof. I just find it kind of an interesting philosophical question. Who do you guys think would be a better fit at your respective programs that you cover, and who you think would be better? Anyway, that's all I got. Love you guys. Bye.
Great voicemail there.
Great question.
It is.
Because that's really thought-provoking, because my initial gut instinct is it's Coach Prime with no questions asked.
Yeah.
So USC and UCLA, their recruiting potential, like just as a general thing, if they have coaches who care, like USC's is obviously top five, but UCLA's is top 15, like if they actually have a coach who cares about recruiting.
Yep.
But supercharging that puts them both in the territory of, you know, having the talent composite of a national title contender. Jonathan Smith is... I think, you know, from a technical standpoint, pound for pound, probably the best coach in the Pac-12, but he's not that recruiter.
Yeah.
And I don't think he would be. So I think what you're getting with Jonathan Smith is what they're getting at Oregon State. You're getting a damn good program. It'll take a little while to build it, and then it'll be really, really damn good, but it's not probably going to be, you know, you don't know until a guy is at a major recruiting power how he can recruit. But the fact that Prime is doing that at Colorado makes it easy to project what he's going to do if he has a job that has, you know, the geographic setup, the demographic setup to really bring in talent. So I think the answer is Deion Sanders.
I would agree. And I feel like, and I'm trying to think of what situation Jonathan Smith would be better in. And that's no insult to Jonathan Smith, who's a great coach, but I feel like that Deion can do this at Colorado means, like, say you're Utah. You know, you have Kyle Whittingham. It's like this consistent, like, Jonathan Smith takes over for Kyle Whittingham, and you feel like, okay, they're going to be really good. They're going to run the ball. They're going to play good on defense and all this stuff. But, like, I could see Deion going in there and just changing that and making it, like, fun and not consistent and, like, big, you know, but raising the ceiling where you could just, like, get all kinds of recruits in there and be crazy. I don't know what situation Deion wouldn't be potentially better. Like, if you're going for upside, I think certainly in LA, you want that recruiter guy.
I think Deion's a unicorn. Like, yeah. And I'm basing that off of, like, what he did at Jackson State and then literally watching one game. But I think you're getting a guy who can recruit at the absolute highest level. And then on top of that, somebody who makes damn good decisions with his coaching hires and with, like, just his macro program management stuff. Like, I didn't love that he didn't know the names of the guys he was kicking out of the program.
Right.
Literally, besides that, I don't know that there's a single thing you point to and say, oh, that's not a good idea. That's not great. As it is right now, I think he's done a phenomenal job. And I think he's, you know, going out and getting a sitting head coach to run your offense and having it look like that in game one, I mean, I like Jonathan Smith a lot. And I think if you're talking about, like, getting him, I think it's a real conversation whether you want him or Kalen DeBoer, right? I think it's a real conversation whether you want Jonathan Smith or, like, Luke Fickell.
Yeah.
But I think Deion Sanders has the potential to be one of those transformative figures in college football where it's like, who would you pick over him? Nick Saban?
Yeah.
I mean, not even kidding. I think that's sort of the idea there. I mean, you're getting both qualities. You're getting that high recruiting thing, but you're also getting somebody who makes really good coaching decisions.
Andrew says Deion would rub USC donors the wrong way. I mean, if you're winning, I don't think you're rubbing donors the wrong way. Like, he's got his own, you know, Netflix, YouTube shows, all this stuff. You know, I'm interesting what he would do with the media. But I think when you're in USC and UCLA, because it's a professional town, you have to be somewhat open to the media if you want coverage, because they could cover the Rams or the Dodgers or the Lakers or the Clippers or, you know, Shohei Ohtani and the Angels. Like, there's just so many other things you could cover. But Deion, even if he like shuts out the media, you can't not cover him. Like, he's going to be a huge story. So I don't feel like with donors or whatever, you're winning, they're going to accept you. I think that's going to be, yeah, I don't think that would be an issue. There's people that he just rubs the wrong way, and there it happens all over the place. But
talking about one of the most famous athletes of all time, one of the most outgoing athletes of all time, you know, who's been a endorser for, you know, a million different brands, who's been in front of a camera since he was 18 years old, he's not going to have a problem with the spotlight. And yeah. I think he's going to, he would adapt to meet the demands of any kind of big time job. But also, I mean, if he builds Colorado back into a power, Colorado can be a power. We'll have to see how this plays out. My initial gut instinct was that he wasn't going to be there very long. We'll see.
Yeah. All right. Emails. Do you want to start us? Old
sure.
Mountain West.
We are at Old Mountain West is the new Pac-12. This is from My 63 Chevy. With the Pac-12 name still holding far more value than the Mountain West, isn't it in the best interest of everyone to take the best fits from the Mountain West, add one half other schools, and bring them into a new Pac-12 that's far less than it was, but is still better than Washington State and Oregon State going to the Mountain West? I propose this is the league. Washington State, Oregon State, San Diego State, Fresno State, UNLV, Boise State, Colorado State, Nevada, San Jose State, Wyoming, Montana, North Dakota State, Gonzaga, and St. Mary's. Yes, adding two schools from 1AA is something I've heard basically zero about, but these two schools make a lot of sense. Montana has a large stadium for 1AA at 26,000 and is always sold out. It fits from a location sense as well and has been a good program for a long time. North Dakota State is a bit more of a reach, but if they want to go D1, this is a far better option than the MAC or something on those lines. If they don't want in, then one of the leftover Mountain West schools would be a good slot in. Last off, Gonzaga. Yes, they don't play football, but there's no other men's hoops brand that is even semi-obtainable that is anywhere near the draw or level as Gonzaga. This league would be a pretty good basketball league that could also maybe add St. Mary's as a second non-football member to add even more to the basketball profile and push that angle a bit. I might be wrong, but does Gonzaga basketball alone bring more money to a conference in terms of units, TV money, and exposure than all of New Mexico State, Air Force, or Hawaii sports? I think this is a real possible outcome if the Pac-12 agrees to take on many of the higher-ups in the Mountain West, such as Gloria and Navarra's. What do you guys think?
I think you're doing too much here.
Yeah.
And Gonzaga has like their own kind of sweetheart deal. They get their own units. Like, I don't think they want to go and just be a part
Start sharing them with everyone?
Yeah, like they... You know, they didn't want to do that, I don't think, with like the Big 12. And this is like a, you know, watered down version of that. I feel like what you're trying to do is keep something afloat. And maybe it's going to be like an 8-team league that has an Apple deal and streaming and all of that. But going this deep, I don't think that's really the solution that you're wanting to go.
I think what you could do is something like Washington State, Oregon State, San Diego State, Fresno State. I like that. Boise State, throw them in there. And then it would have to be something like, I guess Colorado State, UNLV, and Nevada, maybe San Jose State in there instead. But yeah, something like that, where it's like an 8-team league.
Yeah.
Cause that would be a decently high quality football league too. Like, it would be a cut above where the Mountain West currently is, from a status standpoint. It wouldn't be a very good basketball league. But they would be, I would say, top half, reasonably competitive in football. And it would probably quickly be the best of the, we wouldn't be calling them G5, but whatever, G6,
yeah.
The best of that group.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for that one. John Abrea says, visionary, Ryan and Dave, I'm sad. This is the final year of the Pac-12. However, fast forward a few years and envision a world where four former Pac-12 teams make the college football playoff. Could this have been Larry Scott's master plan all along? In 2025, Oregon State from the Mountain West, Stanford from the ACC, Colorado from the Big 12, and UCLA, if Dante Moore is ever named the starter, from the Big 10, make the 12-team playoff. This never would have been possible if the old Pac in the old Pac-12. And the credit for this visionary concept goes to Larry George and the Pac-12 presidents. And on a scheduling note, the official last day of monsoon season in Tucson is Saturday, September 30th, which means when Washington visits my Arizona Wildcats in week 5, it's entirely possible that Penix will be playing in a haboob. as Lebanese poet Khalil Gibran once said, let there be space in our togetherness. Pac-12 forever, John in Brea.
I love it. I love the idea of it was inception all along. Like, force all of these Pac-12 teams inside of these leagues that have playoff access and then have them ascend. It'll be Pac-12 ascendance is continuing beyond this
year.
I
like it. Yeah.
I love it, John. This is a long one from Thomas.
Okay.
The Empire Strikes Back. Hey, guys. I am running a couple episodes behind listening to the podcast. As a result, I just finished listening to Dave's incredulous rant on California and Stanford and California deciding to join the ACC. As Ryan implied, there's been an avalanche of stories on why TV networks such as Fox or ESPN were the nefarious villains behind the seismic amount of college football realignment this summer. No one, however, seems to have a reason why conferences think bigger is better, except, of course, that increases the value of their next TV deal. So why, you ask, why would schools in a conference already as bloated as someone eating a late-night order of fried chicken and waffles with a side of cheese curds, why would they think even more expansion is a good idea? Well, it's actually quite simple. The more teams within your conference, the more at-large CFP berths your league can gobble up. And the more CFP berths your conference swallows, the more money there is to split with your backbencher programs. If you don't believe me, just ask Rutgers. Believe it or not, in the early years of the current playoff format, the Big Ten and SEC had an almost symbiotic relationship. While Southern schools dominated in getting to the national championship, Ohio State and friends actually appeared in more New Year's Six games on the whole. Thus, it was the Big Ten that actually made more money from the playoff overall, despite barely being able to even sniff a natty. By 2018, however, the state of parity was no more. The SEC had come to dominate both in terms of berths in the New Year's Six games, as well as playing in the championship. So as you can imagine, the Big Ten was open to a solution that would fix that problem. Or as we political science majors at UCLA call it, proportional representation. Even so, I don't really understand why the Big Ten specifically thinks expansion is smart for it to pursue. That's because the Conference of Truck Stops is going to play more in-conference games than the SEC and therefore will likely not have as strong a win-loss record. And while this mystery may never be solved, there is one entity that surely benefits turning college football's postseason into a tournament. That's right. Ryan should stop playing the Imperial March sound drop for USC and start to use it instead for the NCAA. Make no mistake, this isn't conference realignment anymore. It's good old vertical consolidation. Just the type of monopolistic behavior, in fact, that is music to President Baker's ears as he walks through the halls of Capitol Hill, arguing for the need of an impartial arbiter to rein in the robber barons of college sports, one rebel alliance at a time. Be careful what you wish for, boys. You might just get it.
Blast came from the Death Star. That thing's operational.
Let the hate flow through you.
That was a lot.
There was a lot. I'm not sure what it means.
What Thomas said?
Yeah.
What he's saying is that the reason this is all happening is not because of TV money, but because of college football playoff money, which isn't true. So that should answer his question. And Rutgers is currently like hundreds of billions of dollars in debt after going to the Big Ten. So it's not true for them either. So,
yeah,
none of this is true.
I've learned you can always spend more than you make.
Yeah.
It just happens.
Yeah. These conferences need to read The Wealthy Barber.
Yes. I love it. You just put a little money away every month and you'll be wealthy by the end. You love that. Overreaction from Shane. He says, week one overreaction. Pac-12 in its final year is the strongest conference. What do you think? Also, I enjoy listening to you guys over the years. Wish you'd keep it going for my Beavs and the Cougs after the conference blows up.
Oh, yeah, baby.
We might, Shane. Yeah, we got to talk about Beavs and Cougs. Not the strongest conference, though.
No, but maybe number two.
Potentially.
Yeah, the Big Ten doesn't look very good to start out with. The ACC looks a little bit better than expected. The Big 12, I think the Pac-12 has a chance here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, baby.
I like it.
All right. Next up.
Text message?
It's a text message. We already answered it.
Yeah. So there's no bye week in the survival pool. Like, just picking 12 straight weeks. So don't plan to like be able to take a week off.
All right. Last question. This is from Alfred Boomslang. Week 2 buffs.
Isn't there? Oh, there's a, that's a, not a. email.
Yeah, okay. Your identification of spam emails remains one of the biggest curiosities. Howdy, gents. It says investment strategy. In light of last week's creation of Burkford, I will be selling. Oh, wait, no, this isn't. This isn't a spam email. Wow. You were right. It's not spam. Investment strategy. In light of last week's creation of Burkford, I will be selling all of my shares of Berkshire Hathaway and investing in Burkford by the Bay. Thanks for the stock tip, guys. Cool. Anyway, moving along. This is from Alfred.
It was a real email.
It was a real email. Not a lot of there. I will say that.
Yeah.
Howdy, gents. As wonderful as it was to see my Buffs win against TCU, I think Coach Prime, the staff, and the team's true test is this week against the Bug Eaters. Last weekend was an emotional high, and now there's film on the team. How did the Buffs adjust scheme? Did they fix special teams and defensive mistakes? Could they focus throughout the week after such an emotional, intense game, plus the ubiquitous national spotlight after the win? Preseason, I knew the Buffs would be better this year, but I had doubts on them getting to a bowl. After week one, I'm super excited the team is so entertaining on the field, but I still have doubts on getting to 6-plus wins. If they win this weekend, I think they can get to at least 6 wins. What say you? Go Buffs. I think you're trying to be too cautious, Alfred. I think this is
too cautious.
You
think he's had a 1-11 season?
I think he's been battered.
The film thing is, I think that's a real thing, though. I don't know if it's necessarily going to hurt Colorado, because it's pretty evident what they do, but maybe it's some ways you can take advantage of defensive special teams or holes that outside of the superstar players, maybe something like that. But I think there's definitely some teams that I felt like San Jose State fell that, they had stuff on film already, and Oregon State was able to jump on it and use it well. I don't know if Nebraska is going to be able to do that, but it's a real factor. I think early in the season, when you don't have film on someone, when you do, would TCU be? Would it be different if TCU played them again, knowing what they do? I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, I think Colorado is going to win 7 or 8 games this year.
Okay. So, this would be one of them.
Yeah, and I think. I think there's when you're following a team that's been bad for a very long time, it can be tough to adjust to the new reality that they're suddenly good. And I think Colorado fans had a little trouble in 2016 also buying that. Oh, wow. They actually are suddenly OK again. But I think this is even more than that. Colorado has a few positions where it's got some of the top level guys in the Pac-12. I mean, which receiving core are you taking over just Travis Hunter and Jimmy Horn by themselves? Probably USC, maybe Washington. I don't know. I don't know who else you're taking over there.
510 yards. Come on.
Yeah. So, I mean, UCLA is pretty good. J-Mac Sturdivant was pretty good. But that's a good receiving core. Very good, very good quarterback. They're going to win a lot of games.
Yeah. All right. We had a couple comments, and we'll get you out of here. Carlos in the chat says, if the Pac-12 had stayed together, do you think any new rivalries would have formed? If so, which ones? No, I think they've been together long enough. I don't think that would have changed.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah. And then Mark says, why has SC never put names on the jerseys? It's just a tradition. That's sort of what they do. They're not a team that changes up the sock color, or they don't make a lot of changes to the uniforms. It's just one of those things that they don't. It's more about the team or whatever. But I think Penn State does that. I don't know how many other. Do you know how many other schools don't put their names on their jerseys? I think Penn State, USC. There's probably a couple, I would think.
Yeah, I think. Those are the only two that pop off the top of my head. Does Notre Dame?
Yeah, I believe so. Well, maybe not. I don't know. We could Google that real quick, but
no, we're not going
to
do that.
Okay. Let's go wrap things up. I got a Lincoln Riley press conference to get to.
Thomas is asking, why does that not work? Because it's the TV money, Thomas. It's not the CFP revenue. The CFP revenue, I think each Power 5 conference, just as a general rule, gets an $80 million base share. I don't think the berths are actually that much more. It's somewhat more, but it's not enough to move the needle more than what the TV revenue is. When the Big Ten added UCLA and USC, they added I don't know, what was the estimation of the TV revenue value that they added per year?
Yeah, it was way more than $80 million.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of money. So, no, it's the TV money. It's
it would
not
be,
the CFP.
Yeah, so like in the, so the Big Ten, like before Oregon and Washington, if every school is getting like in the 75, 80 million range from the, you know, and that's what, 18 schools or 16 or whatever it was then, I forget how many now, the one share that the whole conference gets is about one share of like the TV revenue for a year. And there's 16 or 18 of those schools. So yeah, it's not, it adds, you know, 5 million or 10 million per school, but no, it's not, it's just a percentage, a small percentage of what you get from that TV revenue.
Well, and beyond that,
look plus at, keep your emails concise. Like, don't more words are not better. Like,
no,
just keep it tighter.
We don't like words.
Tighter.
But the other thing is, look at the schools that actually got expanded.
Tighter.
Look at the schools that actually got taken into new leagues, and count how many playoff berths they all have. Washington has one. Oklahoma has one going into the SEC.
They've been a couple, haven't they?
Yeah, they've got a few. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oklahoma's one team that has some. Washington is one team that has one. Oregon has the first one in 2014, right?
Yeah. Right.
But that's all we're talking about right here. And they were not targeted first, if we remember. The ones that were targeted first were USC and UCLA. USC obviously has potential, but
More than Oklahoma.
But the reason they were targeted was because of their value as a TV entity.
Yeah.
That was the reason. That's why Texas was targeted. It had nothing to do with the increased possibility of more CFP berths for these schools.
All right. Well, we are going to wrap things up here on the Podcast of Champions. Hope you guys liked our little preview episode. And make sure you check back. Please, please, please enter your picks for the survival pool. If you did it last week, we had 360-something people enter. I don't want to see like 50 people didn't enter week two. Like, no, get back in there, enter it. It's great you did it the first time. Keep doing it every week because everybody's alive because everybody won in the Pac-12. I feel like you're pretty good this week. I think there's some good options. So get your picks in there. David took Colorado. I'm taking the Beavs in Oregon State. But for David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and we will talk to you next time.
Buff Stampede.